One, two. Okay,
okay, that seemed, that seemed better. We got two, so hopefully.
Warning, the following podcast is a shit show, and the individuals you are about to meet are idiots. Their opinions, anecdotes, and advice contain zero nutritional value. This is the critical human condition and all of its strangeness. This is life, according to an idiot.
Hello, degenerates.
Hey.
Strangers, adventurers.
Oh, nice. I was about to say, hey, fucks.
Hey, fucks.
Hey, fucks.
Welcome.
This is your first time hearing this podcast? I just called you a fuck. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and we mean it.
And we mean it in a good way.
And all you people who have been listening, you're fucks too.
You're a fuckling.
Yeah.
Or no. I'm sorry. The new ones would be a fuckling. The old ones are fucksters.
Okay, yeah, I like that.
Hey, fucksters.
Hey, Fosters, you're listening to According to an Idiot. Hi, I'm Mo.
And I'm Jeremy. Sorry, Mom, if you're listening. She sometimes does. I'm sorry I opened the show with so many F-bombs.
We do have two special guests today, which is my partner sitting in the background who's playing a scary game, who may occasionally yell, and my dog, who might have stinky toots. And then we all yell.
Fantastic. I am alone. But I also have stinky toots. I voted that we keep Mo's partner in the background because I thought the screams would add to the spooky air that I hope to produce. So let's start this minisode. And this is a minisode. This minisode, just for in case you are first timers, in which case you probably already left. A minisode, how that differs from our regular episodes is there's less babble at the front, believe it or not. And we are typically telling shorter stories that are just kind of more to the point. Rather than just a story, I will be telling multiple stories in this one because we're talking more about a concept, and that concept is the urban legend of the hitchhiking ghost.
Ah, I heard about this on SpongeBob.
What?
I'm thinking of the hash-slinging slasher.
Yeah.
Hook-hand guy.
Hook-hand.
Hook-hand is a hitchhiker tale, so really it all ties back to SpongeBob.
The hook hand, are you referring to the lover's lane where the kids are making out in their car and the radio says there's a killer on the loose and he has a hook for a hand.
Yes.
And they feel something scratching at the door and they get out in the cold moonlight and they see hanging from the car door handle a rusty hook.
It was the killer.
It was the killer. He tried to open the door with just his hook hand and then it came off and he just left.
He got embarrassed.
He got really embarrassed. A horrible killer. And
just popped right off.
Yeah.
And he's like, how am I supposed to kill him now?
Guess I'll just go on living with my stump. So, hitchhiking ghosts. What an urban legend this is. So I want to start with an old story first recorded by a 16th century Swedish priest who was known to be a, quote, collector of omens, whatever that means.
Can you hear Flo in the background?
If Flo yells loud enough, we will hear.
Flo, give me a quick little, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh, perfect.
Okay,
that
cool.
was very audible.
They were yelling a little bit earlier, so okay. I wasn't sure if it was picking up.
In fact, I'm going to turn that, what I just heard, into a soundbite, and then we're going to repeat it throughout the episode.
Perfect.
So here's an enhanced version of that soundbite.
Oh my God.
Okay. Also, I want to cover this because listeners might be picking up at this at home. Mo is dating someone named Flo.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think we ever really like talked about that or addressed it, but yes.
A good choice.
As you probably know, I'm Mo and my partner's name is Flo. We didn't plan that. That's just how it happened. You may refer to us as either Mofo or Flomo. Both are
Flomo.
Pretty much great options.
Moflo. Love it. Okay, so back to this 16th century Swedish story. In February 1602, three men, a priest and two farmers, we were returning to their town from a holiday feast in a nearby city. As they depart from this feast, a woman overhears their plans and asks to join them. The men welcome her, and they set off. Along their travels, they grow hungry and opt to retreat to an inn. Inside, they order food and chat around a table, and the woman requests a drink, so the innkeeper fetches a jug of beer. The jug is dropped off at the table, and the group quickly realizes that instead of beer, the jug instead contained malted grain.
Oh my God.
I'm just pausing for a sound effect real quick.
What's the difference between beer and malted grain?
Well, malted grain is, first of all, not a liquid. It's a cereal grain that has been made to germinate by soaking in water and is then halted from germinating further by drying with hot air. It'll all make sense afterwards, though.
So they're given essentially like...
a bucket of seeds.
Yeah, a bucket of seeds. Okay.
Grains are different than seeds, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
So the jug contains malted grain. And while the men stare in perplexment, the woman calmly orders another beer.
Fuck yeah. Another, please.
Yes, please. So she doesn't drink the malt grain. Mm-hmm. She just sees it and goes, oh, they got the order wrong. I'll order a second one.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The innkeeper fetches another jug and wanders off. The men immediately peer into the jug, expecting more malted grain. Instead, they discover the jug is full of acorns.
What?
What the heck is going on? Something ain't right.
They are having strokes.
So, unbothered, the woman orders yet another drink, and the innkeeper returns with another jug. The men investigate the third jug and are mortified to find that it is filled with blood.
Ah! Oh my god.
So, like, while she's ordering, she didn't think to just be like, hey, I ordered beer. I don't want another mug of seeds and nuts. How about I just get my beer?
And the bartender says, this isn't more seeds. This is blood.
Here you go.
What's the problem here?
This is what you ordered.
So the woman calmly gestures to the jugs. Get a load of these fellas. And explained how the upcoming year would yield an abundance of grain, hence the jug of malt, ample fruit on the trees, hence the jug of acorns, but unfortunately, war and plague would ravage the country, hence the jug of blood. So after she gave her ominous prediction, the woman vanished into thin air, revealing herself to be a phantom.
And a hitchhiker.
And a hitchhiker. You're telling me that woman that hitched a ride was a hitchhiker? This folktale is one of the earliest known examples of the vanishing hitchhiker urban legend. The ones that we will explore further on in this minisode are obviously much more modern. This is the oldest one we have. Mm-hmm. So it was recorded in a 400-year-old manuscript written by priest John Petrie Clint. That example differs from modern vanishing hitchhiker accounts, but includes several key trademarks that reappear in similar stories throughout history. So these hitchhiker stories, whether they are people who claim they're true accounts or if they live purely as myth, they all include the same elements no matter what. And here are some of them that we see in this previous story. Number one, the ghost leaves behind physical evidence of their presence. In this case, the three jugs filled with seeds, acorns, and blood. Also, the ghost was female and assisted by male witnesses. In modern versions, the hitchhiker is frequently a woman stranded by a road and flags down a typically male motorist. Mm-hmm. In this version, the woman joins her male companions because she is heading home somewhere. Most future tellings begin with a woman asking for a lift home. Lastly, the phantom hitchhiker gave a prophecy before parting. In other accounts, the hitchhiker offers a prediction that is later proven correct, although the author in this case did not specify whether the prophecy came true because it's a very vague, vaguely translated story.
It probably did.
It's probably why he wrote it, to explain all that.
Right, because like if all the blood and stuff was spilled, people died, who's going to write that it came false?
Honestly, if none of that came true, it would make the experience super confusing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's a ghost, and for some reason they produced three jugs full of grain, acorns, and blood, and vanished.
And she was like wrong about all of it.
And she was way off. But you know what? We all make bad predictions sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I guess in that sense, it's a very relatable story. A ghost took a gamble and lost. Our modern understanding of the vanishing hitchhiker legend comes from American folklorists, two of them, Richard Beardsley and Rosalie Hankey, who worked together in the... That's a funny name, right?
That is a good name.
I love it.
Hankey.
Beardsley is fun, too. Mm-hmm. Beardsley and Hankey, who worked together in the early 1940s, compiling popular folktales and urban legends. They collected at least 79 written accounts from all across the U.S. of encounters with vanishing hitchhikers. In 1942 and 43, Beardsley and Hankey provided an analysis of their findings in two separate articles published in what was called the California Folklore Quarterly. They determined that the phenomenon existed in four distinct versions. We're starting very academic here, but I promise we're going to get into the stories soon. Mm-hmm. Number one, stories where the hitchhiker provides an address through which the driver realizes they've just given a ride to a ghost.
Okay.
Actually, 49 out of the 79 fell into this camp. For example, the driver arrives at an address that is long demolished or non-existent, at which point the hitchhiker vanishes from the vehicle.
Oh my God.
So they go, hey, my house is here. And they pull up to an old gross house and he's like, not really. And he disappears.
I used to be.
Just lowers in opacity very slowly. Like too slow.
He just walks away backwards.
Version number two, stories where the hitchhiker, often an elderly woman, prophesizes disaster. After giving their grim prediction, the hitchhiker, in most examples, vanishes from the vehicle, sometimes while it's still in motion. And I think this kind of goes back to this weird thing we have with old ladies and bad stuff.
Yeah.
But we hate old ladies.
Right. And they're always nagging. You know, I think that's why.
Or they like scary.
Yeah. They get the stereotype of like, oh, they're old and wise and they know when bad things are going to happen. They have to be magical. There's no other way they would know this. It can't be that they're perceptive and being aware of their surroundings and the predictability of man.
A perceptive woman. No, thank you.
She has to be a fortune teller.
Version 3, stories where the hitcher, always a young woman, is picked up at a public function or place of entertainment, like a dance hall mostly, and driven to what is revealed to be a cemetery, then vanishes. In this version, the hitcher has a notable totem, like a personal article of clothing, that is either left in the car or discovered on or near a headstone bearing their name.
Their panties.
I found her G-string on this beautiful, ornate headstone. 4, stories where the hitcher is later found out to be a what's called a local divinity, which is kind of like a local patron saint, you know?
Okay.
So Beardsley and Hankey's survey consisted of 79 isolated accounts from a total of 16 different states. 47 of the accounts were of young female apparitions, 14 were of old lady apparitions, and 18 included apparitions of unclear description.
Okay.
The legend has been carried on by writers like Jan Harold Brunvand. A folklorist and former professor at the University of Utah, Brunvand immortalized the Vanishing Hitchhiker in his 1981 book, The Vanishing Hitchhiker, American Urban Legends and Their Meanings, which I actually have a copy of right here.
Wow. Have you read it?
I've been leafing through it because there's a bunch of urban legends in here.
Mm-hmm.
So I mainly just look through for tales of
the hitchhiker.
Hitchhikers, but really good. So, nicknamed Mr. Urban Legend, Brunvand was inspired to bring folklore to younger audiences after noting a disconnect between university students and the subject, saying, quote, "They seem to think folklore belonged to somebody else, usually in the past. That was something quaint and outdated." Brunvand stressed that urban legends are a part of folklore and reflect modern societal concerns, hopes, and fears, which I think is true. We talk about them a lot here.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost always like relatable to something current, you know, like or something instinctive that we all fear or think.
Definitely. Yeah. Trying to explain some sort of natural phenomena.
So Brunvand claims the legend of the Vanishing Hitchhiker has grown from old European stories involving travelers on horseback. Over the centuries, horses turned to stagecoaches and eventually modern automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was crazy. A version of the story can even be found in the Bible.
Jesus was a hitchhiker.
Jesus was looking for a ride. In Acts 8:26-39 of the New Testament, an angel guides Apostle Philip down a desert road connecting Jerusalem and Gaza. He is instructed to find a chariot. Philip locates a chariot on the side of the road that is occupied by an Ethiopian man. Philip asked to join the man on his travels, and as they drove, Philip offered the Ethiopian spiritual advice until approaching a small lake. They stopped the chariot, and Philip baptized the man in the water before suddenly disappearing. So here's some actual stories.
Yeah.
So first one that I could find was the Niles Canyon Ghost.
Okay.
This is a real urban legend. The Niles Canyon Ghost. I think this is in California.
Okay.
So the ghost of a young girl is said to wander a section of Niles Canyon Road. Often near a bridge, drivers have claimed to see her near Dumbarton Bridge and Bay Bridge. If you're in the area, I guess you'll know that. According to stories, the girl signals the drivers, and when they pull over to help her, she asks for a ride home. She provides an address, claiming that she lives a short ways across the bridge. However, as the car begins to cross the bridge, the girl vanishes in her seat. In variations of the legend, a particularly curious witness tracked down the address given by the girl and contacted the residents. According to the legend, a woman answered the door and after some uncomfortable conversation explained the description matched her daughter, who had died in a car wreck on the bridge many years ago.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
And you'll see that at a ton of these stories. It's always like, take me to 564 Willoughby. And he goes, no problem. And then she disappears. He's like, holy shit. Goes there and there's some old man answers. He's like, that's my daughter. She died 30 years ago.
That would be...
And it's, you know, obviously spooky for both of them.
Yeah.
And then they embrace each other, and then they start to feel each other, and then they start to kiss each other.
And then they get married because they bonded over this shared trauma.
It's really beautiful, right?
Question for you.
Yeah, of course.
If you came across a hitchhiker, would you give them a ride? And, like, under what circumstances would you give them a ride?
Oh my God, never and never, none. I don't know. So if it was somebody I recognized, obviously, that's a given, though. I don't think I could ever these days give a hitchhiker a ride.
Yeah, I don't think I could either. I definitely could not. No.
No. It's just too risky.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust anyone.
I've seen hitchhikers.
I've seen a few. But honestly, like, not as many as media would make me think that I would encounter them.
Yeah, it's pretty antiquated because I think most people have access to, like, Uber or don't put themselves in that situation.
What about a child? Like, if you saw a child hitchhiking?
Here's where my mind would go, is that it's a trap.
Yeah, same. I would just call the police at that point.
Exactly. I would definitely let the authorities know, like, hey, there's a kid hitchhiking. Because also, especially for a kid, but one reason why there might be, you might see less hitchhikers is because I think it's more clear too to hitchhikers that it's dangerous for the hitchhiker. The kind of person who's willing to pick up a hitchhiker, you're either really nice or like you would love to do horrible things to a stranger.
Yeah.
No one can trace it. They were on the side of the road.
Right.
Because I would also just never hitchhike. That's scary to me. Because who the fuck's going to pull over for some dude in the middle of the night on the side of a road?
Flo, would you ever pick up a hitchhiker?
No. I'm tiny and I have no qualities of self-defense.
So tiny, no self-defense.
Yep.
I think partly too, we might go through this. I can't remember if I took notes on this part of it. But part of this legend too is the fact that it kind of lends to this whole phenomenon of hitchhiking going out of style because it became so dangerous.
Now it's lame. Now you're a loser.
Yeah. It's like, what am I, a free Uber? I hope they're going to pay me some money, like at least $5.
Right. Gas money. Where's my tip?
Where's my tip? Rate me. You're not on Uber. I know. Just rate me to my face. What do you think? Do I have kissable lips?
If it's anything less than 5 stars, get the fuck out of my car.
I mean, I know my lips are thin, but are they kissable? So the parent comes out and says,
they died 10 years ago.
In other recountings, the shocked and mournful parent informs the driver that their daughter had died on that precise day years ago, implying that the ghost only returns to their haunting grounds on the anniversary of their death. This is also a very common theme. Or in other vanished hitchhiker tales, the ghost appears on the anniversary of their birthday, which is kind of cute.
That's cute. I feel like if I were that family at that point, I would just put up a sign.
Yeah, please.
On that day and be like, we know they're dead.
She's gone.
Sorry, we've heard it.
But also, if you were their parents, wouldn't you go looking for her?
If I knew they were dead, then I wouldn't look for them, no.
Well, if you heard there was a ghost.
Oh.
Or would that be too much? That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah.
If you had mourned healthily, it probably wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Is healthily even a word? I don't know.
Healthily.
But if you had mourned fully, you probably wouldn't want to, or you probably shouldn't go looking for a ghost. Because it kind of defaults all of your progress. If you're like, I'm looking for their ghost, you know?
No, I'm fine. I got over it.
I got my spirit box. Is anybody there? Honey, are you there? Just radio static. Oh my God. That's her. That's her voice.
She always made noises like that.
She always made noises like... Have you ever used a ghost box?
No, I haven't.
I was with some ghost hunters that were using it, and I use the term ghost hunters very liberally. But, you know, going ghost hunting, probably, unless you're in like a really scary place, is very... It's a disillusioning thing. It's kind of like, oh, this is what this is? Because we went to this place in Posttown, Ohio. This allegedly haunted school. They had a spirit box or a ghost box, which is just like it's like an FM receiver that like jambles the signal, thinking that the theory, I think, is that there are certain frequencies that a radio will pick up that can be picked up on through like a radio wave that is energy or a spirit talking from beyond the grave. I don't know if that's correct. I believe it is, but it's something like that. And that to me alone is kind of a sketchy theory.
Yeah.
But weird things have been picked up, like EVPs. Not just from spirit boxes. Spirit boxes and EVP, I think, are different. I think EVP, you use like a very sensitive microphone. But anyways, regardless, a spirit box, what you hear is you start it up and all you hear is like static from a radio because it's like jambling every radio station they can find and playing everything backwards, I think, or something weird like that. And through the static, you will hear like some words. But I'm pretty sure those words are just from like radio commercials. But like maybe the point is, I should really look into it because maybe the point is that the ghost is intentionally.
Explain why they always say get out then.
Because.
Get out of town.
Get out of town. These car deals are out of this town world.
I'll kill you with these amazing deals.
I was murdered in this school 20 years ago, and now I'm selling cars.
Leave my house.
And come to my store.
I'm just like imagining like a ghost turning the AM FM little knobs.
Yeah.
And they're like trying to like get their voice into a station.
I also want to point out their theory to how ghosts communicate is the same way that the Transformer Bumblebee communicated in the 2007 Michael Bay film Transformers.
Okay, but did spirit boxes get it from Transformers? Or did Transformers get it from spirit boxes?
Oh, shit. Are Transformers possessed by ghosts?
Maybe they are ghosts.
Oh my God, this whole time Transformers have been haunting old Victorian homes.
Maybe they're the hitchhikers all along.
Because they are, dude, they are the car.
Yeah. You're like driving down the road and then all of a sudden Bumblebee disappears. You just like skid your ass on the road.
He transforms while I'm inside of him and he crushes me. And then I'm a ghost. This goes deeper than I thought. Holy shit.
You never knew when you started this episode that it all comes back to Transformers.
Holy shit. More than meets the eye, indeed. So a strange abundance of these stories occur at bridges, possibly due to the inherent danger of a bridge, because especially back in the day, mm-hmm. back when like our parents were young. Are your parents boomers?
Yes.
Yeah. So we got older parents and it was like a new renaissance for how unsafe the roads were.
Yeah.
Cars were just like crumpling machines. They absorbed no impact. You just fucking died.
And seatbelts weren't like a thing either.
In the 70s and stuff, pretty sure you can get away without a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Also, like if you were drinking and driving, the cop was like, just pull over and sleep it off.
Yeah.
So it's bridges are always really dangerous. That could also be why the legend occurs around a bridge, because, you know, the kids in town say, oh, you know, there's a fatal car crash by the bridge and now there's a ghost, blah,
you,
blah,
like,
blah,
go,
trying
go
to
near
scare
it,
each
and there's
other.
Just like 15 different like little crosses.
Yeah.
In memory of...
There's like 70 sunken cars under the bridge. We should really put a guardrail up. Bridges tend to accumulate black ice also. You always see those signs before a bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
So in wintering conditions, there's always the possibility of you veering off the road and just getting annihilated, you know? Nothing more American than that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting annihilated. Granted, veering off a bridge was more likely 50 to 100 years ago when there were less safeguards factored into public planning and infrastructure. But what is interesting, speaking of highway safety, everyone loves that segue at parties.
That was chef's kiss.
Vanishing hitchhiker legends have also appeared near infamous lengths of road in America and abroad. It's common for most towns to have one or more historically dangerous curve in the road. These occur when streets and highways are built around natural obstructions that require road crews to pave an abrupt bend in their path. A popular American nickname for these vehicular death traps is Dead Man's Curve. You ever heard of this?
Mm, yeah.
It's just like a dangerous stretch of road that bends too quick.
Why do they do that?
There's like a geographical obstruction. They can't cut through.
You're saying like in Ohio where there is nothing there, they got to curve around things? Or they got to curve around a plane? A cow was standing in the way and they didn't want to move it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I really don't know, because I think so. A lot of these also are in towns themselves, because when we think of Ohio, we think of the highway that runs through it, the interstate.
Yeah.
And that is through flat farmland. But there's places in Ohio. Ohio, as much as we love to hate on it, Ohio is quite an enchanting state.
Oh, my God.
Who paid you to say that? Did the state of Ohio compensate you? And they're like, you need to advertise so people stop leaving.
Ohio, travel here.
Ohio, we have cows.
Ohio, die in a car crash here. First of all, Ohio is the mother of presidents.
You are turning into a father.
I am slipping down the dad red pill tunnel.
You are. You got interested by highway facts.
Dude, I skipped over a good two paragraphs of like, in 1972, they measured that before bridges had rails on them. Oh, check it out. This is going to absolutely blow your fucking mind. More of our country's presidents, this is from the, go figure, the Ohio Secretary of State. More of our country's presidents come from Ohio than from any other state. 8 of 44 presidents were elected from the Buckeye State, earning Ohio the nickname, the mother of presidents.
Ew.
8 out of 44 is not that good.
Yeah, that's not that many.
Anyways, sorry to interrupt this for that fascinating little thing. Dead Man's Curve, a morbid reference to the numbers of crashes that have occurred. Onset Curve. Other slang includes hairpin curve, switchbacks, Slaughter Alley, and a Kamikaze Curve. They spent all this time coming up with nicknames, no time thinking of solutions to stop people from dying, which is fantastic. Another very American thing. So as mentioned earlier, one form Hitchhiker Tales can take are ones involving a premonition or warning. Many modern stories include hitchhikers offering warnings to drivers venturing along dangerous roads, like the story we're about to go into.
Hey, be careful.
Just use your fucking brakes for once, please.
That's probably the one I've heard the most, where they're like, hey, be careful, there's like a turn up here, or like, oh, there's a dog in the road or something. And then they get there and then they are like, ah, oh my God, if that... you know, mysterious stranger who disappeared didn't tell me, I would have died right here.
I would have killed a dog. So, in an old issue of the French magazine Light in the Night, an alleged true story was printed documenting a fateful drive on May 20th, 1981. In this story, four young adults driving outside a remote seaside town saw an old woman wearing a white raincoat and a headscarf standing alone near a bridge. Wearing white is also a very common trend in these stories. Because ghosts are white. If I'm a ghost, I hope I'm not wearing all white, because that washes me out. I'm pale as fuck.
Well, you're probably going to be pale anyway, because you're dead.
See, I would hope that when you're dead, you get to pick the best image of you, and then, like, be that, you know? Like a profile page.
Then why would old people pick their old selves? Because objectively, that's when you're ugliest.
Well, I think if you die as an old person, you don't get to pick because you're stupid.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, because you have to ask. They're not going to do it for you. You have to ask. And old people, they don't know. They don't know how phones work. How are they going to ask God to give them a better body, you know?
Yeah. And if you're a child, they're like, you would speak a lot worse if you were younger. So you got to stay as you are now. Sorry, kid.
Yes, exactly. There's just a fetus floating around. That'd be wild. That'd be fucking wild. Yeah, I gave a lift to a fetus and it just disappeared. Tom, we need to talk about your drinking. So four young adults.
I'm just imagining like a shrimp in the passenger seat.
Like a barely formed fetus. What's that, buddy? You need to get home? Don't worry, I got you. Old Tom's got you.
There's a turn up here.
Yeah. What's that little boy? Is that something?
There's a dog in the road.
There's a dog in the road. Okay. The old woman motioned to the red two-door Renault 5, which is a French car. I looked it up. As it approached, and the passengers, feeling guilt at the sight of a stranded grandmother figure, convinced the driver to help her. They offered the old lady a ride into town, and she graciously accepted, boarding the compact vehicle. To optimize space, the two passengers in the back reoriented themselves so that the old lady sat secure between them. It was around midnight as they pulled back onto the road, crossing the bridge and speeding toward a shadowy bend barely illuminated by the short cast of the car's headlights. The old woman suddenly bellowed in a clear voice that overpowered the music blasting from the car's tape deck, and she said in French, "Mind the bend! You are risking your lives!" Just then, the driver pumped the brake seconds before the drastic curve in the road revealed itself in the headlights. The driver was able to clumsily, though successfully, maneuver the curve, preventing severe injury or even death. The car erupted with shocked reactions as they realized the vacant middle spot in the back seat.
Ah! She disappeared!
She turned into a fetus.
She's a shrimp.
And they raised her. They named her Sarah. The old woman had disappeared suddenly. As the two passengers noted, she vanished the moment the car cleared the curve, or neared the curve. The four friends claimed to have reported the incident to the local authorities, though they obviously were unable to, like, really look into the case. It was just sort of, okay, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As seen in this story, the female phantom hitchhikers frequently wear white articles of clothing. There are so many variants within the vanishing hitchhiker lore. Wearing white isn't a crucial aspect, but it does cross us over into another folksy phenomenon, and that is the woman in white. And this transcends getting picked up in cars. This is like a whole thing. So the woman in white... To deviate for a moment, a woman in white is a classification of a female ghost, and you see these across the world. Dressed in stark white clothes, especially white dresses or gowns, These apparitions are tied to local legends centered around tragedy, normally passed down in small rural communities. It varies, but your average woman in white legend deals with themes of death, heartbreak, and unrequited love. It's always like a lonesome lady ghost that walks the earth in search of something lost or unjustly stolen from her.
Like Corpse Bride.
Yeah, like Corpse Bride. A lost child, a murdered husband, some horrible betrayal. Actually, even in Deckerville, Michigan, where my parents, we used to have like a cabin, we'd always go to this dive restaurant. It was called the Forrester Inn. And I remember hearing stories as a kid about the ghost of a woman in white who was said to cross this main street outside of the restaurant. She would float through the building towards, behind the building a few miles back was Lake Huron.
Mm-hmm.
It was every night on Halloween, apparently, of course, because, you know.
Right, yeah.
Spooky.
That's when the veil is thinnest.
There was two big old, old houses, like 1800s, across the street from the restaurant. She would walk from one of those old houses, across the road, through the Forrester Inn. And they said if you were working the in the cellar on Halloween, people would feel a cold rush at a certain hour. And they would say it was her. The local legend had said that the ghost was like looking for her husband who died in Lake Huron on a freighter.
Poor lady.
And yes, that's a freight ship because Lake Huron is big, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's marginally smaller than the state of West Virginia in terms of surface area.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's the fifth largest freshwater lake on Earth.
Wow.
Isn't that right? Yeah. So the freighter ship, I guess, according to legend, it sank in the lake like 100 years ago or something. So similar to the Vanishing Hitchhiker trope, she could be seen once a year on a certain anniversary, which in this case was Halloween. So back to it, the woman in white had began as a popular medieval legend who was a bad omen. She was believed to mark a person for death, manifesting inside homes where a family member would soon die. In the 20th century urban legends, it was thought that a woman in white might appear faintly in photographs just before or after a person's death, which I think is fucking terrifying.
That is terrifying.
That's spooky.
Especially like back in the day when you couldn't Photoshop something.
Yeah.
Or fake something like that. You know?
Right.
Like you take a Polaroid and there's just some bitch in white standing behind you.
I don't remember her being there. So another popular variation on the Vanishing Hitchhiker ghost legend are stories of drivers who see physical hitchhikers appear on the side of the road, sometimes in strange and outdated apparel. These are the ones that I grew up hearing about, these stories. These apparitions will either manifest in the middle of the road, like all of a sudden they're in the middle of the road,
mm-hmm.
or they'll step suddenly in front of the vehicle, causing the driver to run over them. Only to vanish without a trace when the panicked driver rushes from their vehicle to help. They felt somebody run over, like they saw a full-bodied person roll under their car.
So like, if that happened to you, would you be relieved or pissed off that you didn't actually run someone over?
I don't think I'd believe whatever I said. I'd be like, there's no way I didn't just run somebody over and they just flew mm-hmm. really far or something.
Would you like still call for like an ambulance or something in that case, you think? You know, it's like, I ran someone over, but there's no blood. There's no sign of anyone.
You know what? I would be, oh man, I don't know. What would you do?
I feel like in that case, like, if there was absolutely no sign of anyone, there was no sign of the actual injury, like, my car was fine, there's no, like, blood, there's no person.
Yeah.
You know, assuming I didn't see someone run off either, like, I'd probably just be like, all right, ghost, bye. I'm not staying.
If you were on a desolate country road and nobody was nearby, like for miles,
mm-hmm.
but there was somebody in the road and you ran them over and you killed them, there's no traffic lights, there's no cameras anywhere, would you drive off?
No.
Okay, just testing.
I have a stethoscope and a sphygmomanometer with me.
What the fuck? That's a made up second word. What the fuck was that?
So like,
sphygmomanometer.
I was made to run someone over and then resurrect them.
What's a sphygmomanometer?
That's a blood pressure cuff. You can't read someone's blood pressure.
Your blood pressure is, zero. What the fuck?
Well, I don't know if I can fix that. I do know CPR. My certification is expired.
Just like you.
But I could crack your rib, though, if it wanted me to.
Yeah, just make it foul play. Yeah, so that's stories I grew up hearing with people that said they saw a guy in like a top hat step into the road, some person in old clothes, and they're like, what the fuck is this person doing? And they jump in front of their car or they just appear in front of their car. There is, okay, one story I want to read before I get to the main story of this, the meat and potatoes.
Okay.
It's, I think, very scary, so much so that I want to read it from the original source.
Okay.
I'm getting this from strangenewengland.com. I think they have a podcast as well. where they talk about New England stuff. Yeah. So this is the what they call the redheaded specter of Route 44. So I'll try to skip through this a bit, but it says the spirit can be found on Route 44 at the edge of Rehoboth, Massachusetts. The ghost usually looks like a red-headed man wearing a red flannel shirt and jeans. He has a large red beard as well as red hair. He is usually 6 feet tall, described as well-built by witnesses. Sometimes he is very clean-cut in his appearance. Other times he is dirty and disheveled. The circumstances under which this ghost appears are as specific as the location. Most witnesses who find this ghost usually drive on a stretch of Route 44 that is at the end of Rehoboth, Massachusetts, and at the edge of Seekonk. These fucking names. New England's names. usually motorists chance upon the ghost either after 10 p.m. into the small hours of the morning. The most hair-raising account given regarding this ghost comes from a couple whose car broke down on a stretch of road after 10 p.m. The husband told his wife to stay with the car while he moved forward to find a house where he could call AAA to get a tow truck. As he walked down the road, he saw the ghost sitting by the roadside. He had his red plaid shirt and red hair and beard, but his clothing and hair were in disarray. Thinking this was a living man, the husband asked him if he knew where he could find a phone to use. He had to ask several times because the only response he got from this ghost was staring and grinning. When the ghost stared and grinned at him, the husband asked him if he was all right. At this very moment, the husband reported that the ghost's mouth began to twist. The ghost's eyes then glazed over into pure white. The husband backed off slowly at first, then started to hurry. He heard the man's eerie laughter, but when he stopped and turned around, the ghost wasn't there. The laughter lingered, however. It also spontaneously switched location. One second it was in front of the husband, and the next it was behind him, and then to one side or the other. The disembodied laughter continued to follow him until it stopped suddenly. When the husband returned to the car, he found his wife sobbing. When he asked her what was wrong, she told him that while he was gone, something impossible happened. She was sitting in the car when her husband left and she turned on the radio to pass the time. After a few minutes, a voice interrupted the song. She assumed it was the DJ at first, but the voice then addressed the wife by her name. After this, the ghost then began to mock her and laugh in an unsettling way. The wife got out of the car to escape. But she was so frightened by what happened, she remained outside the car until her husband came back. While the couple was able to flag down another driver and get back home, the husband believed that this incident made his wife a much more nervous woman.
Hmm, that's sad.
Yeah.
But we all get anxiety one way or another.
Yeah. So I guess with this urban legend, they don't know. Many people have seen this guy, and all he really does is laugh and smile. He has a nickname. They call him Herbie Red.
That is horrifying.
Take it as it is, or whatever they say.
Oh, I'm taking it.
Yeah. So we're going to take another story, please, if you will. This one is a very famous one called Resurrection Mary, probably the most famous hitchhiker ghost legend. There are countless stories concerning phantom hitchhikers, but one of the most celebrated and timeless examples is an urban legend that comes from Chicago. The Windy City has no shortage of ghost stories. Settled in around 1780, Chicago has seen literal war, devastating fires, civil unrest, and corruption brought forth by crooked politicians and crime syndicates. In our line of work, that's what we call pure, concentrated ghost juice.
Yes.
It's all over. They got juice all over the place. We call it Juice City, me and Mo. We call Chicago Juice City.
Splash me with your ectoplasm.
Okay, stop right there.
Spray me.
My mother might be listening. In other words, Chicago has plenty of souls haunting about. One that I'll be discussing is named Mary. Good old Mary. Legend has it, sometime around the 1920s or 30s, one night a girl named Mary was on the town with her boyfriend, and they had spent the better part of the evening dancing to the roaring beat of big band music. The O. Henry Ballroom was often a sanctuary for restless youths to congregate under the spell of thundering swing music. And that night was no different. But the joyous music and rowdy dance floor couldn't keep Mary and her boyfriend from stirring up conflict. At some point that night, the impassioned teenage sweethearts got into an argument which had escalated so that Mary stormed out of the O. Henry Ballroom and into the brisk night air. Still fuming, Mary began walking home, trudging up Archer Avenue in her white party dress and dancing heels. Today, Archer Avenue is lined with stores and lit by streetlights, but it was a far more lonesome scene in the early decades of the 20th century. For the sake of storytelling, we might visualize a desolate two-lane road, nearly painted black by a starless night. And Mary, reduced to a slender framed shadow, pacing along the shoulder of the road. The only source of light is the occasional glow of car headlights sweeping past her, illuminating her path for a brief moment before vanishing down the road. Then there came a final wave of light, that being the headlights of a clumsy driver who hadn't seen the small shadow walking along the roadside. It wasn't until they veered off slightly that they caught a glimpse of a girl in a white dress. By then, it was too late for a course correction. The vehicle struck Mary and dragged her body beneath the wheels. It's sad that the driver fled the scene, leaving Mary's body to be discovered the next morning by passersby. Her parents had her interned at Resurrection Cemetery, which is, I believe, on Archer Avenue or nearby, burying her in her favorite white dress and dancing shoes. There are few cold hard facts to back up that story, but it's been retold across Chicago for decades. Researchers have struggled to connect the story to graves at Resurrection Cemetery, with the closest being Mary Brugovi, a young woman who died in 1934 in a car accident somewhere in downtown Chicago. Native author Erthla Bielski documented a potential connection back in 1999, citing the grave of Anna Maria Norkus. Maria, obviously being Mary. Norkus died in 1927 in an auto accident while coming home from the O. Henry Ballroom, so pretty close right there. But now to the sightings, the reason Mary's death is all that relevant today. Starting in 1939, a man named Jerry Paulus, a native Southsider, claimed to have met a woman named Mary at a different ballroom, the Liberty Grove and Hall at 47th Street and Mozart. Jerry alleged to have enjoyed an evening of dancing with the mysterious woman and even received a kiss at the end of the night.
By a child?
Well, so he was also young. He was a young man, too.
Okay.
So he was young and she's like probably like 16. So he's probably the similar age.
Okay. All right.
I mean, back then you could be 30 kissing a 16-year-old at a nightclub. No one would give a shit, which is problematic. But one thing he did say is that she was really cold. Her lips were cold. Her hands were cold. When they were inside, she was just very cold.
I know what you are.
Say it.
Say it.
Say it out loud. Okay, I'm so sorry. We're so close to the end. I'm sorry. We just watched the first two Twilight movies over the weekend. What fucking trash, dude. My God. I loved it. I loved it because we were just laughing the whole time.
But
the fucking line. He takes off his shirt and he starts to sparkle. And then he says, "This is the skin of a killer, Bella." Like, I howled with laughter
at
that.
It's so good.
I was like, what the fuck?
Neoflo watched that last year, and it was a similar experience. It's fucking good. And it gets worse. It gets worse as they go on.
I believe the second movie really sucked. So we're going back to Mary and Jerry. Mary asked Jerry for a ride home, during which she directed him to drive along Archer Avenue. According to Jerry, the woman suddenly disappeared from the passenger seat. When he stopped the car, he found himself near the gates of Resurrection Cemetery.
Oh my God.
Sightings emerged again throughout the 1970s and 80s, most reported by cab drivers, with multiple involving motorists reporting to have nearly hit a woman in a white dress who stepped into the road suddenly. Witnesses all claimed that the woman had disappeared once they rushed from their vehicles to check on her. All of these were reported to occur outside of Resurrection Cemetery. So that's the story of Resurrection Mary.
Do you think, like, for those people that don't stop and check on her, she, like, gets them later as, like, revenge? Like, she's checking for the morality
yeah.
of people?
It's like that show, What Would You Do? Where, like, they set up a situation and see what people
yeah,
do.
Like,
yeah, but she kills them as a ghost.
Yeah, because she was a hit-and-run victim.
Yeah.
So what if she's, like, trying to find other people who would do that to save other potential hit-and-run victims? Check on her, you're fine. But if you don't, yeah, she gets you.
Perhaps. Can we get a sound effect of somebody, of Mary getting run over by a flow? One more time?
One more time. That's good. Is that clear? Is that good enough?
Perfect.
Can you say, my leg?
My leg.
My neck. My back. My
pussy and my crack.
Yeah, my pussy. I forgot the pussy part. I was going to say my crack.
My neck, my back, my crack. Oh, my crack. So that's the story of Resurrection Mary. Then that concludes this whole deep dive into Hitchhiking Ghosts. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope this is some good spooky, some good ghost juice for you.
That was really good.
For your Halloween season.
Yeah, I want the ghost juice on my face.
Okay, we're going to stop this right now. You are canonically a lesbian, okay?
Do you think lesbians can't squirt?
I thought it was pee.
Think women can't squirt?
I thought it was pee.
It's not pee. It's just partly pee. At what percentage of a liquid has to be pee for you to consider it to be pee?
Like, I don't know. Okay, if it isn't pee, it is immediately something with pee in it.
All right.
You know, that's some squirt with pee. You wouldn't say that's just squirt. You'd say that's squirt with pee.
But if you had like a glass of water.
Okay, if you had a glass of chocolate milk and someone pissed into it, how much would you have to stop them before you stop calling it milk?
Yeah, exactly. That's my question.
It's like, I'd say pretty immediately. I'd say it's piss if there's piss in it.
If there's like a drop of piss, it's not piss now.
I guess if there's a drop of piss, that's okay.
Right. So like two drops of piss.
Two drops of piss.
Still okay.
You know those cups that you pee in for the doctor?
Yeah.
One of those.
That's a lot.
No, I'm not. Well, that's like a double shot glass.
That's a full pee.
Honestly, truly, if I'm being honest, can I be honest?
Yeah.
I would say a teaspoon of piss.
Okay, yeah. You know? I feel like that's reasonable.
It's more than a drop. Mm-hmm. If you were to take whatever amount of pee it is and drop it in it and it makes a kerplunk, I'd say that's too much piss.
Yeah.
Like one drop of piss. I'm not going to notice that one drop of piss in my...
Right,
I'm going to think something salty came off my mustache.
So my idea is it has to be less than a shot, right? Because piss can't be the same amount of taste as vodka does, you know? Or something like that.
What? Hold on, what?
Like alcohol... When you put it in anything, it's a very strong taste. And I feel like piss, the taste is probably much less than alcohol.
Yes, because it's really just salty water.
Right. So like
I haven't tasted piss really ever.
I have not either. But this is what I'm assuming.
Maybe when I was a kid, I got piss on my hands. Like, I know it's salty. I don't know why I know it's salty.
Okay.
So I think it'd be like if you poured Gatorade into milk, you'd be like, what's something's, you know?
Yeah, I feel like my threshold is like as long as I can't taste it.
Okay,
Then I'm good.
Yeah.
It's like less than a shot amount.
Definitely less than a shot.
Like,
because a shot's kind of almost a full mouthful.
Yeah. Okay. No, I don't.
It covers the tongue.
I don't want that much piss.
We should probably stop talking about this, but email us accordingtoanidiot@gmail.com. How much piss is too much piss when you're drinking it?
Yeah.
Where are my piss drinkers at? Mm-hmm. Where are my squirters at? Yeah.
Where are my squirters at? Let us know. Comment. Email us. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at According to an Idiot. And on Twitter /X/ whatever it's going to be called next at Idiots Accord. Email us at accordingtoanidiot@gmail.com. Leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify and let us know that we talk about piss too much for a paranormal comedy podcast. You can also subscribe to our Patreon when we talk about a lot of things, piss included. If you're like really feeling what we got going on right now, you can subscribe. We have early access to episodes, ad-free listening. We have an exclusive creepypasta series that you can't get anywhere else unless you give us money for it. So definitely check it out.
And if you want a preview of that series, we have released one episode to our main feed. Mm-hmm. So you can get a little taste of what you're missing.
Flo, tell them to listen to us.
Listen to According to an Idiot. It's necessary. It's important. It's the best.
There you go.
You heard it there, folks.
Let's get another little soundbite of Flo screaming for good measure before we leave.
Oh my God.
Perfect.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned. We got more coming out for you. And I will see you in time.
I love ya. Bye.
Bye.